Right, so I first want to thank the organizers for the invitation to speak at this meeting. And I'm going to talk indeed about Lagrangian cobordism. And this is based on joint work with Paul Biran. And the purpose of my talk is going to be to explain the following diagram. And the diagram is the following. It's a category that I'm going to call cob, then with a star, and it depends on a manifold that's going to be a symplectic manifold, M. And I'm going to describe, hopefully, a functor that goes into another category that's called the derived Foucault category. Also associated to M. And the interesting property of this functor is that it factors via yet third category that it's called the cone category over the derived Foucault category. And this functor here is F tilde. So now, of course, nothing on this board is intelligible. And the purpose of the talk is to actually explain what's going on. But this is a conference about geometry and physics. And one thing I can say is that the derived Foucault category via mirror symmetry has some relevance for some physical problems. So some might agree with this statement, some might disagree, but in any case, it's a statement I think people would subscribe to generally. So that's all I had to say about physics, but I'm going to go back to geometry later. But in any case, I'm going to start my talk by explaining a little bit about the Foucault category. So this is a difficult task, but somebody in this room will be happy because she's going to talk just after me about it. So even if I only just am able to explain that, it's going to be the time will not be lost. So let's try to do that. So the first part is about the Foucault category, but first I should say actually that there is some geometric content in this talk, even if there are just categories on the board. And the purpose here, or the main interest, main object of interest are Lagrangian submanifolds inside the symplectic manifold. So a symplectic manifold is a manifold with a two-form that's non-degenerate and closed, and Lagrangian submanifolds are submanifolds of middle dimension on which the symplectic form vanishes. And somehow one would like to have some sort of systematic point of view on Lagrangian submanifolds, and the talk that was just preceded mine was about floor homology and variants of floor homology. And this Foucault category and all the other categories here are sort of, their purpose is to understand a little bit more about Lagrangian submanifolds. So the first part of the talk will be really to explain the Foucault category. And its derived version, too. And the simplest way to explain that, so there are maybe many of you who already know this thing very, very well. And in this case, you just can maybe check your email or do something else. However, I think many people don't know so well maybe this. And it's a difficult concept, so I'm going to try to take many shortcuts to explain a little bit. All right, so the starting point here, I think, is what's called the Donaldson category. And this is a category that is quite beautiful in itself. So the objects in this category that I'm going to denote by D of M has objects Lagrangians in M. And there are always some sort of restrictions. So for example, some restriction is that maybe you would like to take Lagrangians to be exact. Maybe you would like to take the monotone, like in the discussion that preceded my talk. I'm going to essentially neglect these questions because it would take too much to explain everything. These conditions are sort of included in this star. The star means that I'm imposing some restrictions on my class of Lagrangians so that the objects I'm going to talk about are defined. And if you want me, I can explain more about it. Okay, so here's and I'm going to put a star because of that here too, to mean that I have some restrictions there. So the objects are just Lagrangians in M omega subject to this star condition that I'm not going to explain. And then the interesting part is what the morphisms are. And the morphisms, the idea for the morphisms starts with, so now we want to talk about morphisms. And the idea for the morphism is that there exists this notion of floor homology. If I have two Lagrangians, L and L prime, then I can associate to them floor homology. And I don't want to describe how we do that, but it is possible to be done. And actually, Francois talked in the morning, he described one way for a construction like this. And the other remark is that if I look also at the floor homology going from L prime to an L double prime, then there is a product that I can define. And this product takes values into HF L L double prime. So a natural sort of idea that is due, I think, to Donaldson is to say, well, I could take a morphism simply morphisms from L to L prime is just a floor homology group from L to L prime. Why? Because you see, this product, in fact, is associative. And then if I take here an element, this would be a morphism from L to L prime. I have another element from L prime to L double prime. And the product tells me how to compose them. And so I view the multiplication, which is associative, I view it like composition of morphisms. And there is a unit, and in good circumstances, all the other properties are verified. All right. So now this category is great because it's easy to describe as soon as you know about floor homology. But there is a problem with it that is pretty serious. The purpose why you consider objects as categories the reason why you group all Lagrangians in a category is that you would like to be able to decompose one Lagrangian with respect to other ones. The basic idea would be like for spaces, you would like to take one Lagrangian and say, well, it's made out of pieces that come from other ones that maybe are simpler to understand. So that's a basic idea in topology, for example, when you decompose a space into cells by as a CW complex. And you would like to have the same property here. So one would like to decompose Lagrangians by what one would call cone decompositions. So would like to be able to write what one can write in terms of for spaces, something like I have a space and then I attach a cone to this space. So I write y is equal to x union the cone over some map from z to x. And in algebraic topology, you know that you can do such constructions. You can always attach cones over a map. And then this sort of sequence extends. Then the next stage is a suspension of Z, and you extend it like that. And so in essence, what I'm trying to say is that for a category to admit such decompositions, the category should be triangulated. So what is a category that's triangulated? Well, it's a category that admits a family of triples that are called exact triangles. And these exact triangles are written, I'm going to write them like this. Then you can continue. And this T is analog of the suspension, or the disuspension for spaces. And the exact triangles behave really like this operation that you do in terms of spaces, like attaching cones, and you to this type of operation can associate exact sequences in homology if you want, and it's very functorial, that is, if you attach, use two maps that are comparable, then the cones are comparable, and after attaching the cones, the result is comparable. And all this is formalized in, yes? They don't. The relation is like this. Suppose that everything here, for example, suppose that y, I would like to think like this. If y would be a Lagrangian, I would like to be able to decompose it in terms of x and z. That would be my purpose. So, actually, let's put this here. So maybe this would be like L, and I would like this L to be decomposed into smaller pieces. So that would be my purpose. But to achieve this purpose, essentially, I have this Donaldson category, but I would need this Donaldson category to be triangulated. And the problem is that it isn't triangulated. It's just not. And you need more structure to make it triangulated, and that's how the Foucault category came around. Yes? Yes. Yeah. I'm not going to talk dimension. I'm not going to be taken on that path. I don't want to go there. Okay? The difficulty here is that in terms of spaces, I can obviously explain very well what cones mean. But in terms of Lagrangian, it's a completely different story. So it's just an analogy, because in case you don't know at all what triangulated categories are, the correct analogy is this operation in terms of spaces. And in spaces, the picture that you should keep in mind is just that. So you have this map from this object here, and then you attach the cone on it. That's all you do. Well, you are absolutely correct, but in terms of that category, that's not what operation will do. Okay? It's just an analogy for the notion of triangulated category, which maybe you know very well, but maybe not. And I had to sort of give an idea of what it is. Other questions? By what? Well, it should. If I want to decompose a Lagrangian by means of others, then I would need to have a notion of triangulation. That's what I'm saying. So, essentially, okay, other questions? Okay, now? All right, yes? We are not talking about that. No. Okay, other questions. We're not talking about coefficient fields. Other questions, maybe. I can talk about coefficient fields at the end, as much as you want, but not now, because we're getting late. Okay? All right. Okay, so my point is that it would be really great to have a triangulated category, but we don't have one. And so we're going to do something, and not us, but essentially Foucault, long time ago. So, what are we going to do? We are going to replace, it's a simple idea, but an idea that's simple but will have dramatic consequences, essentially. So what's the idea now? So the idea is type of algebraic object that does have these really good properties of a triangulated category are chain complexes. So chain complexes admit cones. So obviously it's a cone construction that one can do with chain complexes. I'm going to write it down. So if you have a morphism of chain complexes, then you can do this. So she's going to tell me that the degree is wrong, so I have to be careful a little bit. So I'm going to put it like this. Suspension and the differential, and the differential is going to look like this. And maybe it's a suspension for this one, but I'm not going to write it. But essentially, I can build out of chain morphism, I can build a new complex whose differential is given in this form, and this is a chain construction in terms of a cone construction for chain complexes. And so essentially the idea then is, instead of taking the morphism in this category, so for the Fukaya category, one would like to take instead of for the objects, would like to have again Lagrangians, and instead of for morphisms, one would like to take the morphism from L to L prime. Instead of taking the homology, floor homology groups, to just take the chains, because with the chains I can do cones and I have much more data in the chains. And so that's very good idea. So what's the problem? Well, it's a little problem that if then we also have to look at the product. Of course, the product we can check is defined geometrically, so it still exists. But as a geometric product, is not associative. And that's where the complication about the Fukaya category comes into. The problem is that it's not a category. It's very easy to see that once you just take this definition, you immediately have this problem that the composition of morphisms is not an associative operation. So how are you going to solve this problem? Well, you know that it's associative up to homotopy, chain homotopy. So somehow the chain homotopy has to come into the picture. But the chain homotopies, in fact, are also unique up to chain homotopy. So the homotopy within the homotopies have to come into the picture. And the next level homotopies have to come into the picture, and that's called an infinity category, if you keep track of all the structure. So in fact, because of that, you get into the infinity category. And okay, so if you think that this is not too good, but manageable, well, we're not there yet, because the floor complexes, the way I wrote them on the board, are not quite precisely defined. To define them, I really need an almost complex structure, maybe some perturbation so that I have transversality. I need more data. So in fact, my result not only is an infinity category, but it's an infinity category that also depends on all this data. And then I have to include somehow in the structure the dependence of the data. I have to say, well, it's unique up to some sort of deformation in some sense. And so this leads to a very complicated machine. And this very complicated machine is called, however, the Fukaya infinity category, and is described in Zeidel's book. Please look at it. It's complicated. When you look, it's a lot of structure there. And it's a structure that is necessary to describe this object.
All right.
So, now, very good. So what's the Dirac Foucault category? So, okay, the Foucault category itself is this thing, but what's the Dirac Foucault category? Notice that I haven't said anything more about triangulations. Well, is this triangulated or isn't it? It's not triangulated yet. But this can be completed to a triangulated category denoted, I'll use here Seidel's notation, is denoted like this. So I think he denotes it like this because he completes it in an explicit way by using something that are called twisted complexes, and that's why he puts TW. There is an additional type of completion that he uses, but it's not going to show up in my talks. In any case, this category now is completed, but I can say very easily what means this completion. You see, because now my morphisms are in terms of chains, I can take cones with the morphisms. I can do cone attachments like I discussed before. And I iterate the process. I take all the cones possible and essentially in a functorial way. And essentially, if I do all of that, I add all the possible results. And this is this twisted Foucault TW of the Foucault category. So that's how the construction is the completion is constructed. Yes. Yes. It's it's a good question. Maybe yes. Yes. I mean, it's the smallest with respect to this operation. The operation being very precisely described in terms of doing this cone construction in terms of chains. So I know that I'm very unexplicit here, but I think you prefer me to be, because if I go into really the details, it's terrible. Okay? So it's really based on the chain complexes and... All right. Okay. So now, well, there was another category in my story, which was the Dirac Foucault category, and finally I get to it. So what is that? Well, fortunately, this passage is very easy. So the passage here essentially takes a morphism. So the objects are all the time the same. The objects here and here are the same. But at the level of the morphism, I only... So this has same objects. But for the morphism, I take the homology classes. So you see the morphisms before were chains. And now I just take the homology class of that chain. So let's say for morphisms, I'm going to write like this, morphisms. The morphism here goes to the homology of the morphism. Now, you might say the following thing. So, why did we do all of this with this passage to chains if at the end I take my chain and I associate the homology class of the chain? Because, I mean, it looks like I did all of this for nothing. Well, no, it's not for nothing. And the reason is that, you see, when I am at this level, I added a lot of new objects. And this category is now triangulated. When I applied homology to it, I recover here the objects in the Donaldson category, but there are still new objects that I constructed up there. And for each triangle that I had here, I'm going to have here, actually, triangles too. Because I'm moving functorially from one to the other. The other remark is that this category here is actually triangulated in the sense of A-infinity categories, and this is again a complicated notion. But this category, the Dirac Foucault category, is in fact a nice triangulated category. And this is a true category. I mean, it's not A infinity. The composition is associative, and the properties are what you would like them to be. So to recapitulate all this construction is, this in fact gives a way to get a triangulated category starting with objects that are just Lagrangians in a submanifold. And so that the morphisms very much look like homology floor homology classes from a Lagrangian to the other. They are in principle, I think they are in principle bigger. But it's all the morphisms in the Donaldson category appear here, but maybe there might be some more, I don't know. In principle, this construction sort of only tells me that this category is bigger than the Donaldson category, but I couldn't say. All right. Okay, so let's see how we're doing. All right. Okay. So now I want to do a little construction that. Oops. Yes. I fell into this trap. So I have to move maybe. Okay. So look, essentially, so this is counting time. No, it's good. It's kind of, we're going to see 5 minutes or how long it takes to. Go down. Okay, in any case, actually, this board is good because you see, I explained just that corner in all the time I took. And so now I should explain this one. And this part is just a construction with triangulated categories. It's a little bit annoying, I have to tell you this part, because it's a construction that is purely, essentially purely algebraic. But okay, here it is. So suppose C is a triangulated category, and what I want to define is some sort of other category associated to it, which I'm going to call the cone category over C. And I'm going to first try to explain what's the purpose of this new thing, and then we'll see how essentially we do it. So the purpose is the following. If you think about our Lagrangian initial problem, the whole point of doing this triangulated business, triangulated category business, was to try to understand the compositions of one object in terms of other objects. So now, my purpose here is to define some sort of a category in which the morphisms parameterize all the compositions possible of one object in terms of the others. So why is this useful? Because if I want to understand how an object decomposes, I can just look at this morphism. And then they are going to tell me all the ways I can decompose an object in terms of the others. Okay, so that's a purpose. And so now, it's okay, well, that's, yeah, all right, thank you. All right, so now I'm going to try to explain this thing. So I'll try to explain this category. So first of all, what are the objects in this new category that I denote by sigma C? These are just families. Okay, because our objects one day will be really Lagrangians, I'm going to take the liberty of calling this object by L. L1, L2, okay? So the objects are just families of objects of the initial category. And the big issue is, okay, how are we going to define the morphisms? And for this, we're going to first define a cone decomposition of an object. And then we're going to essentially sort of encode in the morphisms all the cone decompositions possible. So first of all, I take, so suppose I give myself L, one object, then a cone decomposition of L is a sequence of exact triangles for I going from 1 to n with the last object equal to L, and the first object I wanted to be 0. So a triangulated category has a 0 element, so I can really start with 0. And this is, so it makes sense. Think again about this attachment of cones for spaces. You attach cones many times and... All right. So this is, and I'm going to call this cone decomposition by eta. And then I need a notion, the notion of linearization of eta. And the linearization of eta is just the sequence of all the Li's. I just take all the bricks I used and I put them in a family. Okay, and now... Yes. Great. It's just an element. And all the Li's are also elements. No, L is just one object now. So the only... So you see... In this new category, the objects are families, but I'm trying now to construct a morphism in this category, and the morphism requires the construction I'm describing here. Okay? All right. So this is a little bit painful, but it's going to last another 2 minutes only, so... Okay, let's go through it. So, remember what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to construct a new category whose morphism encode all the way possible to decompose one object in my initial one. And so, for example, I'm going to write like this. The morphism in this new category, sigma C, from the object L. So, a morphism, one morphism here. To L1 LN. So why does this writing even make sense? Well, I take the family made by just one object, L, and on the other side, I take the family given by N objects, L1 LN. And as objects here are families, it makes sense to look at this. Now I want to write what this phi is. Well, it should be something that parameterizes this cone decomposition. So it's going to be some sort of a triple. Is going to be some element, some little phi, and the cone decomposition eta. And what is this, what are these first two? These first two are essentially saying that maybe phi is an isomorphism from L to A, and then eta is a decomposition, is a cone decomposition of A, with linearization equal to this L1 LN. In other words, I'm not writing here exactly the decomposition for the object L itself, but an object isomorphic to it. So I have to allow to take into account all decompositions, I have to allow an isomorphism there. So I didn't say this explicitly, but I should say. So this guy is an isomorphism. So the morphisms are very complicated if you look at them like this, but they are not so complicated if you think in the following terms. You have an object, and then you give yourself a second one, A, together with a decomposition of A with the bricks L1 up to LN. And you give yourself also an isomorphism between L and A. And this is what the decomposition for L means, really. And now, for this, you can easily see that Okay, so it's not so easy actually to see that this is a good notion of morphism. So you have to compose. But essentially, I'll say just one word about that. Composition comes down to sort of final resolutions in terms of the compositions. That is, you have these bricks. Maybe if the bricks decompose also, you compose you split it in smaller and smaller pieces, in essence, a space. That's what it comes down to, the construction. Okay, so I know you suffered a lot through this. And now the one thing I can say is that this category is obtained by this construction out of the derived Foucault category. All right, but now there are some good news. The good news is that we finally can do some geometry. So we did physics a lot, but now we can do a bit of geometry. And finally, we get to this Cobordis business. And, okay, so what is the purpose of this Cobordis stuff? So, you have this Foucault category, and the Foucault category has an interesting structure because it's derived Foucault category. It's triangulated. You can try to understand how Lagrangian decomposes in terms of others. Then maybe you, if you really want, you can construct this category that kind of parameterizes all possible decompositions. But this is very non-geometric at a level, because you have these morphisms that are already chains, or A-infinity chains, if depending. Then to really understand very well the triangles in this derived Foucault category, you really have to work with a full A-infinity business. And so this Cobordis part is going to show us a geometric way, geometric sort of perspective on, or geometric sort of realization of this sort of algebraic construction. And in fact, we'll see that there is a functor that is kind of interesting. The functor is not very hard to define, F rond there, the F on top. But the interesting property is that it's going to tell us a lot of things about how to decompose Lagrangians into pieces in a geometric way. And this will lead to all sorts of interesting identities in the derived Foucault category and to ways to compute things. All right. And I'll also talk about why it's so good that it goes through here. All right. So now the definition of a Cobordis is a very simple notion. So suppose you are given two families of Lagrangians. And a Cobordis between them. From one family to the other one is a Lagrangian submanifold in M cross C with a symplectic form that's given by the sum of the form on the first factor and on the second factor, and with a property, I have to take this off. With a controlled behavior at infinity, all my Lagrangians in M are going to be compact and closed. And however, when I talk about Cobordis, then I allow for I require actually the following behavior. So V is included into M cross C, and I'm going to draw a picture of V after projection onto the plane. And I'm not going to describe explicitly the conditions, but I'm going to draw them. You'll see what's going on. So it should look like this. So So I take the coordinates 1, 0, 1 up to S on this side, and 0, 1 up to K on this other side. And then the projection should be just some lines here and some lines on this other side for a little distance. So the projection should be just linear. And then here in the middle, of course, I don't know anymore what's going to happen. I do not require anything about it. The only requirement is the projection here should be linear. And the pre-image, pi minus 1 of this region, should look like LK cross an interval. Maybe let's say that, well, it's LK cross, LK cross, yes, K, maybe. Because I put it exactly on this coordinate. And then it's linear, so the pre-image of this line should be LK cross K cross a little interval in R, right? Same here and here. So, for example, the pre-image here is L2 cross 2. Okay, so it's a Lagrangian in M cross C that is cylindrical at the ends. And when I project, of course, what I get is just at the ends, I get just this flat line. And same here. It's smooth, and well, there's not much else to say. I mean, it's a simple definition. It's a little extension of a definition of Arnold, so it's nothing really fancy about it. Okay, so now let's see how do we do a category out of this. Haha, again. Okay, go. Okay, so I'm not gonna bother with it, so let's go here. So let's see how we can make a category. Well, you see, cobordis are very, very easy things to build into a category because, you know, in the smooth world, when you deal with manifolds, the simple thing you can do is if you move from a manifold to another by a cobordis, then you compose by just pasting the two cobordis. Maybe then you have to rescale a little bit. It depends on whether your cobordis is parameterized by 0,1 or 0,2. And that's exactly what we're going to do here, too. Except it turns out that if we start to do here completely arbitrary things, the composition is not going to be well defined. So, for example, if I come with another cobordis and I just paste it here, the distance I use for the pasting is going to be really crucial. Different distances are going to give me different non-Hamiltonian isotopic objects. So I cannot just do it just like that. I have to be a bit careful. And so what I'm going to do to avoid this problem is the following thing. So now I'm going to describe this category, the category of the cobordis category. So the objects are, you know, surprisingly families of Lagrangians. So I try to push this idea from the start. They are going to be there, right? So now we shouldn't be so surprised that they are going to be the objects here. And what about the morphis? So the morphis, I'm going to define again first the morphis in this category from one object to a family, just what we did before with this construction with sigma. And so I'm going to describe them like this. And this is exactly all the cobordis. So it's a space of all V's, so that V's are cobordis from L to this family. And in fact, I'm also going to quotient by a certain type of isotopy. I can also quotient by some isotopy type. And I'm going to explain a little bit why this sort of definition simplifies my life and doesn't get me into this problem with the non-isotopic results of the composition, because I just said that in general I have a little problem here when composing, because it might not get similar. So essentially I want my morphines to look really like this. Yes, I want to start by defining the morphines like this, and then for a general family I take a sum of this stuff. So for a general family, a morphine will be a sum of objects like this. Sum meaning sort of a disjoint union. That this guy is not a morphine, exactly. However, this guy is. And why is that? So now suppose that I want to compose this with something else that looks maybe like this. Yes, and maybe, okay, let's put another one. So it turns out that if I always compose things where the actual gluing between a component and the next one is done on one end at a time in terms of connected components, then the result is independent of the distance I use for the gluing. So if I am in this situation, so this component is disjoint from this one, and this is disjoint from this one, and from this one, then I can glue them, and the result is independent on how long this distance is. However, if this part and this part would be connected, this would be an issue, because then I would have two ends that I glue at the same time, and this would create some space here in the interior, and this space would create a problem. It would depend the area of that region. If it's bigger, it's a different object than if it's very small. Okay, so I just explained this thing, and all right. So, okay, you define it like this. So we have on the board also the compositions of the morphisms. It's nothing complicated about the composition. Very easy. So now, we know what this category of cobordis is. It's just the morphisms look like this and the disjoint unions of this. So this is a morphism, and each of these separately is one, and then the union of all is one. So that's essentially the definition. And now, okay. Okay, thank you very much. In any case, it was a bit late to worry, but almost. Okay, well, these categories do strange things to one, so it's kind of. All right, so let's. Yes, exactly. The morphisms for a general family, so I define the morphisms for just one object, a family formed by one object, and the general morphism, if I put here a longer family, then it's going to have a disjoint union of such. Because here you see, like here, this one would be a morphism. But they have to be disjoint. Each piece has just one positive end, so to speak. Yes, absolutely. Right. It's not completely true, because you also can have one end and then it can be null bordant. So you can have the void set is allowed.
So the void tuple
is an object. Yes, the void tuple is an object, and in fact there is another factorization to get rid, not to have so many void sets running around, but I'm not going to talk about it. Okay? So good. Huh? Or void sets. No, I don't want to use it, but in any case, it doesn't play a role right now. Okay, so. But it's a good point. So, if you do just that, the numbers on one end and the other end, you have a clear inequality, right? But you could also have null bordis. So this could. So you don't really have this inequality all the time. All right, so Very good. So now finally we get to, so this is, I think, it's nothing fancy about the construction, but the part that's interesting is now to see about the functor. Maybe it's four. Functor. Okay, so finally we get to do some actual some real more geometric stuff, and the functor, okay, in terms of objects, it's everything has been constructing in such a way that, well, they match. I mean, it's just the same. The objects are the same. So this just goes to the same family in the objects of the sigma d Fukaya of M. So the objects match. That's now nothing. It was all constructed so that they do. But why are the morphisms of interest? And I mean, why is the functor of interest? Precisely because it's going to tell us the following thing. For each morphism in this Cobordis category, in other words, for each Cobordis I'm given, I can deduce a Condi composition for the corresponding object, which is in the domain of my morphism. So, and this Condi composition, I can read it out of the image of this functor, and that means that this gives to me a decomposition inside this Fukaya category, and each decomposition in the Fukaya category can be written like you know, a sequence of exact sequences in floor homologies, and you can do a lot of geometry with it. So the way people use a Fukaya category for geometric purposes is like that. If you can decompose one Lagrangian in terms of others by this exact triangle in the Dirac Fukaya category, means that if you want to see the intersection properties of the Lagrangian with some other Lagrangian, all these intersection properties can be read off the smaller pieces, plus some homological algebra with some exact sequences involving. So the interest of this functor is essentially that once we construct it or understand how it's defined, we know that for each morphism here, you get a decomposition here, and once you get a decomposition here, you know how to write down these intersection properties or geometric properties Lagrange in terms of smaller pieces. No, I don't know. Now, and actually this brings another interesting point to mind. So obviously you look at this thing and you say, well, but why actually are you doing this? I mean, in the following sense. So maybe this category is so great, why do you have to pass through this one? So the point is that this category is not triangulated, and there is no good way to triangulate. It's very geometric. And however, the morphisms here keep track very well of these decompositions, and that's why you need this sort of invention to say, I can recover the decompositions from this Cobordis category, even if the Cobordis category itself is not triangulated. And the morphism, no, I cannot say that any such thing. Yes. Right, so essentially many of the results that you can prove here move here. That is, you can say things about them directly here. And so a lot of the sort of algebraic consequences that you can draw from the respective result here actually follow immediately if you look at them first geometrically and just from general properties of this functor F tilde. In any case, so, all right, so let me try to explain a little bit what's behind the construction of the functor, and this is actually going to be the end of the talk. And, well, I think I'll manage now on this board. We'll see. So we're going to look at a morphism, and our purpose is going to be to understand what morphism in that category in the Kobordis category have to do with, so look, this is still very useful actually. So what these morphs in this Kobordis category have to do with cone decompositions. So if you, just to summarize a little bit what was going on, we saw that here the morphs look like this Kobordis that I draw there, and we saw that here the morphs look like some sort of cone decompositions of some object. And so the only thing I want to do, I have another 5 minutes, I want to explain how you relate this morphs and cone decompositions, because the relation turns out to be very easy and nice to see and probably a good place to end. So I'm going to take another little Kobordis here. It's actually a pair of them. And I'm going to use some chalk, different color for this. So the first Kobordis, actually maybe it's very many colors of chalk, so I can even use two colors. So this one, the red one, is a Lagrangian N multiplied with a curve, and I'll call it N bar. And this is multiplied with a curve that you see on the board. So it's just this curve, but you have to imagine it's smooth. Okay? And the other guy is a mauve Lagrangian, I'll call it N double bar. And this is equal to N multiplied with this other curve, gamma prime. These are two Lagrangians. You will notice that the two Lagrangians are Hamiltonian isotopic. But the isotopy is not compactly supported for people who know about, you know, what to worry about. But in fact, you can push this curve to this one by keeping the ends, just sliding them one along the other. And so they are isotopic from our point of view. And so because they are isotopic, the following fact is true. There is a quasi-isomorphism between the floor complex of V and N bar and the floor complex of V and N double bar. Now, I have to say a few words about what these floor complexes are. So V and N bar and N double bar are two Lagrangians in some symplectic manifold, here M cross V. And the way the floor complex is defined is the following. One supposes first that the Lagrangians are transversal, which we are going to just suppose. And then the complex is generated by the intersection points of the Lagrangians. And then there's a differential. The differential counts pseudo-holomorphic strips going from one intersection point to the other one or to the next one. And these strips have one side on one Lagrangian and the other side on the other Lagrangian. Okay. And it turns out that even if this is a non-compact space, this floor homology is actually well-defined. It has to do with controlling what's going on at the ends. And there is a quasi-isomorphism between these two floor homologies. Now, one of these two floor homologies, that involving N double bar, is actually, or a floor complex is, it's the same as the floor complex of N and L, or of L and N. Because you see, the only intersection points between V and N double bar lie above this point. And above this point, this is all linear, so in the fiber, in M, you have the Lagrangian L that just intersects the Lagrangian N. And so it's an identification at the level of spaces, that is, the intersection points are just the intersection points between L and N. And then you can remark by thinking a little bit about it that the Floer complexes have the same differential. So not only they are identified, but the differentials are the same. So really the two complexes are equal. And so now the interesting part is what's going on the other side. So on the other side, again, our complex is going to be really special. It's a special picture that you get, because all the intersection points are going to lie above these points. So what is there? What's there going on? Well, it means that this complex is going to be CF of L4 and N plus CF of L3 and N plus CF of L2 and N plus CF of L1 and N. And then after that, you think about it, you say, okay, so the differentials that are just lying in the fiber definitely are there. So it's not only at the level of the spaces or chain spaces that things happen, but the differentials are there. However, you immediately notice that there are more elements in the differential. And why is that? Well, you see, I was saying that the Floer differential counts strips from an intersection point to the other with a boundary on one Lagrangian and on the other Lagrangian. Well, here is a very nice example of such a strip. And so I could go from this point, the intersection point here, to one below. And I could go from here actually to any one of the previous points. So actually this sum is not quite a sum. There is a differential relating this group and the ones that were defined before. There is another part of the differential that hits this sum. Similarly, there is another part of the differential here that hits this sum, and yet another one here, because I can do this argument, for example, here too, right? I mean, I can go from here down. Now, if you rewrite algebraically this thing, this is an iterated cone attachment in terms of chain complexes with four stages. And if you rewrite this a little bit more, you realize that this is all extremely functorial in N, all this construction. And because it's very functorial in N, this translates into this cone business that I was talking about before in the Foucault category, and that's my end. All right, thank you.